way or fear of you or anything.
I have a most interesting subject to discuss with you this morning. The singing ministry of our Lord and Savior. When we were children in Sabbath school.
Well, hi, everybody. Welcome to another episode of The Fundamentalists. My name is Elliot Morgan. I am a comedian slash YouTube personality, I guess, and I do a podcast with my roommate slash housemate slash friend, Dr. Peter Rollins, who's a philosopher hailing from Northern Ireland, Belfast, specifically. And we do this podcast where we talk about life and we talk about... I guess that's pretty much it. We talk about life in various ways, philosophy, psychoanalysis, religion. And this particular episode is the third installment of our three-part series on sex, which began appropriately on Mother's Day. The first episode in the series that we did was about the idea of the supplement. Am I right there? Is that what it was?
Oh, yes. Yes, that's right. To make sex sexy.
To make sex sexy, yeah. And then the other one that we did was about kind of repression and about all that stuff. And we did that one in the office, the Valley Folk office, which was cool. And that was kind of a different environment. And now we're doing this one. And so this final episode originally was planned to just sort of be this kind of loosey-goosey thing. And it's still going to be that, but we don't want to be so loosey-goosey. And this is where Pete comes in, because he's better at this than I am. But we didn't want it to be so loosey-goosey that there's nothing to like take away or have any substance. And I'm the one who detracts from the substance. And then Pete's the one who gives a surplus of the substance. So, Pete, here's how this podcast works. Pete is going to say some stuff. We're going to talk about it for about an hour, and we're going to see where it goes. And then at the end, we're going to have a little takeaway, and we're going to talk about what we've learned or what we haven't learned. Yeah. And that's the whole thing. So, Pete, take it away.
Oh, yeah. Well, and by the way, I feel that I get nervous when things are too loose. That's my fault.
Yeah.
I always like to have some sort of content, some sort of theme. And my rationalization for this is because I, like yourself, we want to respect the people who are listening.
Sure.
To go, although we're sitting down just having a chat, we're also putting work into this to say something that will be interesting. But I do know that sometimes a free form approach can get stuff out that wouldn't come out normally.
But so it's a risk. It could either be the one of the best ones, or it could totally fall on its face. And then when it's done, I'm like, well, and that would be my fault if that happened, just like the typo that we were talking about earlier.
I had a community in Belfast where we had a mix between structure and no structure, and I was always the one who really wanted to plan, but the best things that we did were often the things that were a little bit loose. So
I did that. Yeah, I had my last therapy session was one of the first therapy sessions where I walked in. And I was like, I don't know if I should be like making notes throughout the week. And then we started talking. Then immediately he starts talking about psychoanalysis, and he starts talking about event-based therapy versus like just coming in and being like, I don't have anything to talk about, or I am angry about something you said. And he's like, that's when you start getting into like the nitty-gritty stuff. And then that kind of led to a very interesting session, which was nice. But anyway,
well, this morning when I was thinking about this, I thought, okay, what would be another interesting angle to take on sex? And I thought I'd go for
missionary.
Was that missionary?
Yeah.
Yep. It is the last taboo.
Yeah. Missionary stuff. Yeah. One day.
I thought I'd start with some kind of philosophy. A basic distinction actually in philosophy between appearance and essence. So appearance is what you see. You know, nature and everything.
I love it. I'm so glad you did this. I'm so glad you did not listen to me. I'm so excited for what you're about to say.
You're probably one of the few people, but as soon as I say appearance and essence, you're like, oh, this sounds cool.
Hell yeah.
Most people are like, oh, shit.
No, yeah, we just lost 14 listeners. No, I'm in.
Yeah, well, so appearance is, you know, everything that we see around us. And then essence is kind of the truth. That behind all of the appearances, there is... you know, depending on what you're thinking, there's atoms bouncing against atoms, or everything is kind of the play of differences and mathematics. But like behind the realm of appearances is the truth, and that humans are caught up in illusion. So you get that a lot in philosophy and religion, this idea that we live in a world of illusion and we want to penetrate to the essence. This is actually one of the reasons why Plato didn't like art, because he thought art was going the wrong direction. Nature is a mimicry, an illusion that hides the real.
Nature is?
For Plato, nature is kind of like an illusion. movement and change and all. It's like we're looking at shadows on a cave wall, mm-hmm. and the truth is what philosophers get to by pure abstract thinking is the truth. So nature is a type of illusion, and then artists.
He doesn't sound fun at all.
Yeah, well, you know, he had some good analogies. The cave wall thing, you know, was very
good. That's pretty good.
Yeah, yeah.
But like fun at parties and stuff, I mean.
Yeah, although they did, him and Socrates just sat at parties all day and did philosophy. It was quite interesting.
That's kind of fun. Yeah, I mean, kind of fun. I get it.
In some ways.
As I do this podcast, I get it. I understand the appeal. Sorry, go ahead.
So art is a mimicry of mimicry. That was Plato's thought. Is okay. So we want to penetrate art and get to the truth, but artists, in a sense, kind of mimic nature. So they're getting us even further away from the truth.
Interesting.
They're mimicking mimicry, but we'll come back to that in a second because I don't think that's a good reading of art. But anyway, the idea coming to sex now. Interestingly, this is where it gets more interesting. Is that sexuality? Is it the realm of appearances? So, you know, like whenever you're on a dating app or whatever, you know, you're presenting a certain sexy image of yourself, whatever. And of course, you could say, well, the reality is who you are on the toilet or when you get out of bed, or you're just an animal, or you're just a pile of atoms bouncing around. And all of the photographs we take on Instagram and all of this is a construct. It's an appearance. It's an illusion. The truth is that we're full of pus and blood, and we're just part of matter, mm-hmm. right? And then traditionally, men are seen as believing that they're men, and women are seen as pretending they're women. So traditionally, somebody would say, you know, a man wakes up in the morning and says, "What shall I wear today?" And a woman wakes up and says, "Who shall I be today?" Now, of course, the truth is that's not men or women, but in right. psychoanalysis, the masculine and the feminine are two ways of relating to appearance. So the masculine way of relating to appearance is to think that you are what you appear to be. And the feminine way of relating to appearance is to pretend. And so in one sense, you could say women are closer to the truth because in a sense, appearance is a type of lie. And, you know, a woman performs her sexuality, whereas a man thinks that he's a man. You know, a man thinks that he's
like. It's interesting because the term pretending sounds like not good. Like if you had the choice between believing something and pretending to be something, like it sounds offhandedly like you'd rather do the former. Like you'd rather be the believer than the pretender. But it seems like. There's really no difference. Well, like you're still talking about something that's not actually there.
It's not actually there. So in one sense, what would you prefer? Like if you're going to have to believe something that's not right or just pretend?
Exactly. Like yeah. one's like pretending is privy to the knowledge and believing is like naivete. Is that the right way?
So a feminine structure, and this could be a man or a woman, is someone who could go out to a nightclub and they could very happily take on a different name, pretend they've got a different profession. You know, act a different type of person. Maybe they're very conservative in their workplace, but they go to Burning Man and they dress up like a post-apocalyptic character.
Right.
They enter into
Mad
a world
Max.
Of pretense.
Hot yep. Mad Max.
Yeah, Hot Mad, which is a look that I think is great. Mm-hmm. I think it's a good look. But then a man, the masculine structure, and it could be a man or a woman, the masculine structure is, in a sense, you'd find yourself, you couldn't do that. Because you think you are who you are, so
stupid men.
Yeah, like if you look at Elon Musk beside Grimes, you know you can see this because Elon Musk. There was a picture of them, and Elon Musk is in his suit, and he's very much this guy who believes he is Elon Musk.
Yeah.
Whereas Grimes was dressed up as a goth kind of fairy.
Yeah.
So you could see that Grimes was much more comfortable playing with appearance.
Yeah.
And maybe the next time they go out, she might be wearing something completely different. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Whereas he's probably going to still be in a business suit, you know. But all of this brings up some interesting questions.
Yeah, yeah.
But do you want to talk about that for a second before we don't have, you know, we usually
so
I do
much.
My little 5-minute thing, but actually maybe we should unpack this as we go.
Oh, that's fun.
I don't know.
The original plan when we were brainstorming ideas for this final episode or the final installment of the sex thing. After this, we'll never, of course, talk about sex again in our discussions ever.
Ever.
The original idea was just not talk about sex at all until the very end, and then talk about sex a lot as sort of like a metaphor for for sex.
That might happen, you know.
Yeah, the rate we're going. It's interesting. I mean, I feel like I don't entirely, I think, understand. So I think maybe I have nothing to add.
I'll finish the little thought process.
Okay, then, I'm still trying to wrap my head around it, because I understand what you're saying, but I also feel like I do the feminine thing, because I was thinking about my appearance and the way I dress.
Yeah.
And I dress like literally like in different, like I have outfits that are kind of like, you know, like the fuckboy outfit, and then I have like my more conservative, like, and then I have like doing like you were saying yesterday when you walked out on the patio and I was like wearing my other outfit when were like, you have a different style now, and I'm like, well, this is like one style, but I feel like I do that as well, like I will dress in a way, and all of my clothes typically are projecting some kind of image, but it varies on kind of the day when I wake up. Like I kind of do wake up and I go, I want to dress this way, and I feel like that's what you're describing with the feminine. So that makes me very confused, because I'm such a masculine person that it's difficult to ever wrap my head around the idea that I wouldn't be masculine and manly all the time.
All the time, which you are, you know, absolutely.
Thank you. That's what I was fishing for. Thank you, Pete.
But in psychoanalysis, this idea that the feminine and the masculine are really divorced from man and woman. They're very much just a symbolic structure. So you could be a very masculine guy, but still kind of enter into pretense to be able to kind of play with your identity and feel very fluid in your identity and be able to kind of like performatively enact different people. Or as I say, you might be someone, a man or a woman, who that just doesn't make sense to you. Although in a sense you're no more real, you just believe you are.
Yeah.
You've fallen for it. So the feminine structure in one sense is you're less duped, because you're able to go, well, appearance is a play of differences.
I think about that all the time. I was talking with a buddy of mine in 2 days ago, and we were discussing kind of like branding and like that kind of thing. And that's the other thing too, that's kind of in my mind tied to this, because we're talking about Instagram and we're talking about public appearance. And like right now you have a camera going and I'm wearing sweatpants and like a t-shirt. But then like I was talking about to my friend about how you kind of like, you can treat living life in a way where it's like, how it's fun, like how do you want to look like. I enjoy very much clothes and outfits and all that, and in creating this sort of thing. But what does this, I guess, have to do with sex too?
Because part of it is sex, a sexuality or sexual difference.
Yep.
Sexual differences. What is this feminine and masculine difference?
Topical discussion, dude. I mean, it is in the zeitgeist. It's like we are in a stage right now where culture is just like all systems are aimed at that right now. It's a relevant discussion. It's just one that comes with so many like hangups and confusing things, and also like timidity, because I'm like, I don't like, it's one of those but I know that you're talking about obviously like the essence of these kinds of ideas, but versus the appearance. But it's good. It's a good subject.
There's plenty of us to explore in the future about identity stuff and all of that as well. All connects, you know. But I suppose it's always a topical subject, because it's all about who we are as subjects, who we are as individuals.
Yeah.
And in traditional philosophy, some traditional kind of medieval ideas, the masculine was connected with essence and femininity was connected with appearance. And at one stage that was seen as, you know, very much on the side of men. Men are essence, men are who they are, women are appearance. But actually within kind of critical theory and postmodernism, it's the other way around, is that woman, the feminine structure, is kind of closer to the truth, because we live in the realm of appearances and the feminine is the one who sees that and plays with it. However, this is where it gets more interesting and more complicated, is the psychoanalytic idea that actually it's not that there's the so basically sciences are on the side of essence.
Sure.
chemistry, biology, physics, this is good. Mathematics.
Yeah.
They're all on the side of technically.
This is truth, objective, verifiable. Yeah.
Verifiable. This is the common sense notion. But common sense notion: scientists are on the side of the essence.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, biologists are not talking about what does it mean to be like a have a sexy Instagram.
Right.
They're talking about what is it to be a biological creature. In chemistry, it's about chemical compounds, and physics about kind of like the nature of atoms, molecules, etc. And then the arts are on the side of appearance.
Yeah.
So books and novels and all of
that. Humanities and all that.
Yeah.
It reminds me of a thing that I heard, which is, or like a little comic thing. I don't know if it was like existential comics on Twitter, but it was like this guy's, it's a scientist, and he's like, why do you, he's like, what? Why do you study philosophy when all that matters is like what's actually real? And then the philosopher goes, well, why do you do science? And then right when the scientist goes to answer, he goes, you're doing philosophy, right?
Ah, yes, that's right. Yeah,
it's fun.
Yeah, that is a nice little. I've seen that philosophical joke. Yeah, where someone says like, why would you? How does it work? So someone will say like, why do philosophy? And I don't just study science. And then as soon as you ask them to justify that. Yes, you're mm-hmm. like, there you go.
There it is.
Yeah, there it is. There's philosophy. So for Lacan and Freud and these kind of thinkers, the idea is actually, the distinction is more complicated, that in appearance, there is an essence, which means that the truth of who we are is in our appearance. It's not that there's the truth behind the appearance. You know, in reality, we're just creatures, animals, or, you know, say, play of atoms. And then we have this illusion that we give ourselves to, is that our fantasies and our way of presenting ourselves in the world, while it's a type of appearance, embodies some truth about our deepest desires, fears, and what it means to be a human. In fact, what it means to be, what it means to exist, which is kind of like, this is why Freud said the truth is always spoken, right? That whenever people are speaking, they're always telling you something, not consciously, but in their appearance and what and how they hesitate and the words that they use, the mistakes they make. There's something true about what it is to be that, something true about their desires. So all of this is coming to the point of saying that I think that the issue is The truth is that an artist is not mimicking nature. A good artist is bringing out the essence that is within nature.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Cezanne or someone, a good artist, is whenever they draw a fruit bowl, they're not just mimicking art. So if you've ever seen an artist who literally just mimics nature, it's boring. The art is terrible,
yeah.
Right? But a great artist, and somehow in the appearance, brings out something essential.
Yeah, I was thinking about this with a discussion I was having with a guy about Star Wars, and we were talking about he was discussing Star Wars from an angle of like what it's doing to culture, and sort of like how there's such a stark dichotomy between the good guys and the bad guys in Star Wars. And you know, the only way you know who a bad guy is in Star Wars is that they're dressed in all black and that they're, you know, menacing looking, and the good guys are these you know, they're dressed in beiges and lighter colors and whites and all that. And he was saying that like this is a bad thing, or implying it in some way. And I was like, I think I disagree with you. And he was like, why? And I was like, well, it's by genre a melodrama. Like, melodramas have good guys and bad guys, and that's how you sort of, and then from there you can project like what, like all of these things that are within you onto them, and then you can have, and also there's something to be said for the art, certain forms of art just being escapism. And if you're escaping from something, you don't want all the nuances of life to be in it. You want to see something that takes you away from the complexities. At least that's my understanding of it.
And also, like, in terms of what you're saying...
And now that he's not here to defend himself, I sound way more right than he did.
That's always the way. But I think, yeah, when it comes to something like Star Wars, there's a great example. We saw Solo the other night. If you watch it, you go, of course, it's an appearance, it's an illusion, reality. It doesn't even capture the truth of the complexity of moral life or anything like that. But then, of course, the deeper question is actually, this is a fantasy created by a culture. So what does this fantasy tell us about that culture, how that culture views right and wrong, how that culture understands the antagonisms of life. So in a way, I think the best way to approach a movie, if you want to watch it critically, is not to try to judge it as to whether, you know, it gets to the essence of something more correctly, but more, what does it tell us about the truth of the culture that created it?
Yeah.
And, you know, instead of seeing it as a mere appearance, a mere getting away from something, movies actually tell you something incredibly important about the society that creates it, about what they value, about what they fear, about how they cover over the antagonisms of life.
Ooh, great. Yeah. Good stuff.
So yeah, so whenever people are talking about movies in a sense of like, I want the movie to somehow portray the essence of reality correctly, that's an impossibility. You know, you'd be watching, the closest you can get to that is probably mathematics.
Yeah.
But the idea in philosophy, in certain forms of philosophy, is that no, the fantasy tells us the truth. In fact, it tells us the truth more than the hard sciences. That's the really difficult and interesting thing is that sometimes our fantasies tell us more about the nature of being, nature of reality, than physics or mathematics.
That's beautiful. Do you think when you put clothes, you have a very specific style. You wear cool clothes. You wear, it's like sort of like cloth and dark colors, and you kind of have very nice style. I especially like
a
lot.
Oh, cheers.
That's one of my favorite shirts that you have, I think. But what are you trying to, what do you believe that you are when you put your clothes on? Because when I put my clothes on, I think, or especially when I put certain outfits on, like I was thinking yesterday when I was wearing that one outfit, I was like, there's something about this outfit that just makes me feel older and like slightly more mature.
Yeah.
And so then in my mind, I'm like, oh, well, I want to appear older and more mature. And therefore, what does that say about me? Oh, it means that I still feel like I'm just a kid and I'm trying to figure everything out.
Yeah.
I'm compensating or whatever with my clothing.
Yeah. 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 I am much more, it's annoyingly, like I fall into that idea that I pretend I'm a guy. So I kind of like just go, you know, I of course I perform, we're all performing what we look like, but I kind of think that, oh, I just have a style that works for me, but of course I'm communicating something about myself in what I'm wearing. And my favorite clothes, well, I'm also colorblind, so I stay with grays and browns.
Yeah,
and greens.
You definitely are colorblind. Yeah,
so I kind of avoid any kind of colors because they'll probably clash. But I guess I am enacting a notion of masculinity that is because I like John Varvatos fashion. Like I love that shop. I was in a outlet store the other day and they had one, which is great. So it was all like cheap Varvatos stuff. but that's very much a look of kind of that 80s rock thing.
Oh, that is kind of what you're going for, isn't it? Yeah, especially like the sunglasses and stuff. Yeah,
And my brother, I looked up to my brother, you know, and he was like 8 years older than me. He was in heavy metal. He was fighting the mods. I don't know if you had the mods and metalers fighting thing.
No, I don't think you did.
There were two cultures in the kind of, I suppose, 80s in Europe, whereas the mods had a certain type of style. They were driving the Vespas. They had these little bomber jackets. And the metal guys, they all had the long hair leather jackets. And, you know, that was the look. I looked up to my brother and his mates. And I think I've just stuck with that style.
It's interesting. I remember one time, this is before we lived together, you and I went into I think it was before we lived together. We went into a like Mexican cantina down in Burbank called El something or other. And that's the name, El something or other. And we walked in and we had some margaritas. And there was like a group of like dudes who were like clearly some kind of well off, and we deduced that they were some sort of rap group or like producers or something. And I remember them, because it was kind of hot out, but you were still decked out in your outfit. And I remember we'd hung out a fair amount, so I don't think anything about it and I wouldn't have cared anyway, but we started talking with them and then they bought us like, I don't know, like some kind of shots or something.
Yeah, that's right.
And I remember them looking at you and saying something about them expecting you to be standoffish or something that, but you were so friendly and like you just started chatting them up and all that, and you just like immediately started a conversation. But they made a comment that because you were in this sort of like leather jacket, you had like the sunglasses and everything, you sit down and like then you turn out to just be the nicest person. Oh. And I was like, that's so funny, because like it's just it's I do the exact same thing, and I think other people do that to me, where it's like you see the person, you see their outfit, and you look at them, and then you make an assessment over whether or not you would actually like them. Dude, I remember, this is something, I was in high school, and I...
Show off.
Not to brag, dude, but it went well. Like, after middle school, I was like, I'm going to keep this going.
Yeah, wow. And, you really aced middle school.
It is what it is. I'm a smart guy. But I was in English class, and somebody said something about how you choose your friends. And I, like, to the class, this is so embarrassing. This is horribly embarrassing. But I remember, I think I was, like, in 10th or 11th grade, and I remember saying something along the lines of, like, if someone is wearing these particular types of clothes, I'm probably not going to talk to them. And if it was like a list of clothes that were just not the kind of clothes that would ever wear or even be able to like own if I wanted to. And it apparently like it came off, this is such a weird memory, but it came off kind of douchey or dickish or but maybe just sort of, classist, because I was being very open about just as a kid, just being like, I'm going to choose my friends based on who looks like me. And it always, it like stuck with me because the teacher kind of gave me like a look and as though I'd said something horrible and then said something sarcastic about my being, very honest, like some sort of like, oh, it's a very way to be honest or something like that. Yeah. And I was like, I felt very like, oh, I shouldn't have said that. And then I think that, probably among many other things growing up in conservative evangelical Central Florida, it contributed to sort of just furthering, like withholding that kind of secret opinion, that kind of just like, oh, I can't be honest about that. But it's true. Like it's like, and it was true in the Mexican cantina with the guy who looks at you and he goes, oh, I don't know. And then you find out, he found out that you were the nicest guy in the world.
Yeah.
But the first instinct is to kind of like make an assessment of, from somebody's appearance and to go from there. And yeah.
Yeah. There's and something you mentioned there as well about, you know, whenever you said that thing in school and then you kind of felt judged, what happens then of course is you've got a tendency to then want to repress that.
Yeah.
Push it down and it kind of comes out in unhealthy ways. I think the interesting thing to do, like whenever people say something that's not even politically correct or not good, not nice, whatever, is to again go, what is the truth that's being said in that, the truth of their desires, the truth of their fears, and draw it out. So instead of like saying, you know, there's certain books or certain films or certain things that you know you shouldn't say, is to say, okay, whenever someone speaks, what is that telling you about them? What's the truth that is hidden in what's being said? And actually, if you can help the person see the truth that is in what they're saying, they're more likely to go, oh, wow, I don't even like that part of myself.
Yeah.
I'd like to change that.
Yeah.
Or, you know, so in other words, instead of repressing it, which then means it, it's become stronger, you interrogate it.
Mm-hmm.
You find the truth that is in the appearance, the truth that is being spoken. What's in there that's saying something about the person's past, the person's traumas, the person's experiences. And when that starts to reveal itself, you can actually start to change. You can start to go, oh yeah, you know what, thinking that I just want to hang around with people who look the same way as me, that's probably connected to X, Y, and Z, and I don't even like that aspect of myself. But in other words, you let it breathe, and that's what I'm always saying about, like, even watching movies, instead of judging them, it's more going, what is the truth that is in there, the truth of this, the society's desires that are in that movie.
Yeah, I feel like there's a lot of that popping up right now in pop culture, where there's sort of this like pushback against any kind of like diversity or anything like that, or I don't know, I don't know what right words to use, but there's a thing that happens where it's like, there was that Battlefront thing that happened where it was like a World War II video game, I think, and the cover has like a woman on it. And people were like, this is ridiculous. Like, you can't have this because women didn't fight in World War II. And so these folks I was talking to were talking about maybe making a video showing all the women who like fought in World War II. And then they were like, well, what would your perspective on that be? And I would be like, well, I would watch a video about women in World War II because I would be interested in it.
And sexually turned
and
on.
And sexually turned on because there's, I've seen Wonder Woman.
It's not that type of movie.
Yeah. I was like, I wouldn't think to make that video, because in my mind, I'm like, the person who's sitting there complaining about that and going like, you shouldn't have a woman on the cover of this video game because women didn't fight World War II. I'm like, I don't believe the because. Like, I believe that, all that is like some kind of like justification for some kind of inner thing that's happening. That's just like, yeah, that same thing with me in high school, where it was just that like tribal, like comfort zone. Like, I need to be around people who are just like me, especially in Florida. And so, yeah, it's...
Or displacement, you know, in the sense of when two people argue about something, like not closing the fridge, it's... Sometimes it's just not closing the fridge.
I'm sorry.
Just close the bloody fridge.
It's a freezer, and
you have actually done that a few times. That's right. Yeah.
I almost did it last night, and I was like, "Oh."
Yeah, this is my subtle way of just bringing it up.
Thank you.
Yeah, well, in that case, yeah, when we're talking about closing the freezer, it's literally just about closing the freezer. But sometimes,
to clarify,
yeah, but sometimes that actually can become the truck that we put in all these other resentments into. Yeah. So, you know, that person might be saying about, oh, you know, putting this woman on this video, but actually they're dealing with some, like, it's not about the video game. It's not about World War II. It's not about them wanting to be historically accurate or anything like that.
Because who cares? No one cares.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, because I don't think video games go for historical accuracy,
right,
regardless of anything. But there's something else going on, and it's not even legitimizing what it is. It's simply saying, oh, what does that tell us about either that individual or society, or what the conflicts are within society?
Yeah, I think there's a way of like elevating yourself away from the justice, like the I think if the moment you give somebody allowance, or you're like, well, maybe what they're saying is this, it sounds like a defense. It sounds like you're defending them, and it sounds like you're on their side. And I think it's much more interesting to be like play a little detective in the psychology of it. It's way more fun than...
Yeah, for me, it's like, it's actually, you've got to avoid either, like, a therapist is not your friend, but they're not your enemy either. They're there to tease something out that will lead to something a productive change. And if they're too close to your friend, it doesn't work. If they're perceived as an enemy, it doesn't work. In the same way, it's like the point of analyzing movies or what's going on social media is partly to be able to understand the truth of the conflicts in a society that might lead to positive change.
That's great. I was on the note of therapy. I was thinking about my particular therapist, and I was realizing like it's like there's like some kind of, I don't know what he's doing, but he doesn't do the sort of like life coaching, do this now. But I have, and we've talked about this a little bit, but it happened recently because I was having a discussion with him where I walked in and I was like, I don't know what to talk about. And I was like, I told him, I'd rather not be here today. I was like, but I always love going in, but I was like, I just kind of didn't feel like it. I didn't, you know. And then like my Tuesday night, which is the night before therapy, I'm always like the best person. I'm always like very, I don't stay out late. I don't drink. I'm very just like, well, of course I live a healthy, because I don't want to have to go into therapy and then tell him that I am not, you know, being best behavior, because I'm trying to impress him.
Yeah.
But anyway, I was telling him that like I'm doing this like thing where I'm trying to just like relax and like be, we were kind of talking about like, to get back a little bit to the subject of sex, but we're talking a little bit about like just relaxing and not taking everything so heavily. And he was like, yep, good. He led me to that in some indirect way without ever being like, and it's the same with like drinking and like cutting back on drinking and exercising and like all these things. None of them he's ever told me to do. He's never been like, do this, you'll feel better. He would just be like, at one point he did say, you're like 30, you're in your 30s. He's like, you should be like healthier. And I was like, yeah, I guess you're right. But that wasn't what made me exercise either. It was like a month later that I started exercising. So like he's doing some kind of thing like in the teasing out or like whatever, where it's like, I'm coming to the decisions on my own. And therefore I think they're actually more sustainable, because it's not a type of therapy where he's sitting there going like, well, if you want to, here's what you need to do. You need to go out and party because you haven't partied ever and you haven't did it.
Yeah. Which isn't therapy. I mean, that's something different. That's life coaching. You say as well about staying in the night before you go to therapy and whatever.
And that's present yourself. Shit, yeah.
Yeah, but this brings the point of this appearance and essence thing, because in a way you can never lie to your therapist, a proper analyst, because the, you know, one sense, that's the appearance. You're kind of, you know, we all do it. You're lying. You're kind of presenting a certain form of yourself to the analyst when really maybe you say, say you're...
He knows.
Well, yeah, and also is that the truth is in the lie. But the very fact that you want to present yourself in that way tells the truth of something of your traumas, desires, and sufferings. So it's like, it's not even that the therapist is trying to say, oh, right, let's get past the appearance. Let's get to who you really are. It's like, no. Who you really are is in the lie, yeah. is in the appearance
it's
itself.
It's all of it. Yeah. It's so fun. That's the cool, like, 2018 life lesson, I think, that I've had, where it's like, oh, this is all valid. And it's all, like, real. And you spend so much time being like, oh, well, that's not it. That's, like, not what it is. And it's like, no, it is. Like, it is, in some way. It is.
That's why, with Instagram, Instagram, for example, is not the world of appearances. It is obviously the world of lies and appearances. Like, you know, someone is sitting in a crappy house, it's messy, but they pick the one clean spot in the room and they clean their hair and they take that picture smiling and then they go back to their mess and their unhappiness. So in one sense, yes, Instagram is the world of appearances.
Do you have a camera in my room? You have a camera?
I do, yeah, that is actually a good description of your room.
Dude, my room is disgusting. I'm so angry at it right now. As you said that, I was like, I'm gonna get that place clean. We splurged and got the place cleaned and then our kitchen broke down.
It's been broken down for a while. We've just
kitchen
ignored
broke.
It. The last house I lived in, the kitchen broke for a year.
Really?
Whereas the sink was just full of rancid water, and I just ignored it for a year.
I didn't even see it.
Like,
I did not.
Stopped seeing it.
Mm-mm. So. But we're waiting for it to be fixed. But anyway, yeah. And then we got the place clean, and then my room now is just immediately, it was a disaster again. And not a dirty disaster, just like messy. I hate laundry. But anyway.
Yeah. So, but that's the thing. So you've got your corner where you do a video for your YouTube. But the funny thing is that in a sense, this Lacanian notion that we're talking about here is no Instagram. The truth is always being spoken in the appearance, and at a superficial level, it's the truth of the person's desires, fears, hopes, longings are communicated in the appearance. But at a deeper level, it tells you something about what it means to be human. And at a deeper level, which we're not going to get into at this, is it tells you something about what it means to exist. But it's like, it's in the very appearance, you can tell so much about what a person is struggling with and doing. So instead of thinking, oh, right, they're lying, go like, oh, no, there's always the royal road to truth is the lie. The truth, Lacan once said, I think it was like, the lie always carries truth in its mouth. Not quite that quote, but it's almost like, the lie has always got truth by the scruff of the neck.
Ooh,
that's it. Yeah.
Wait, say that again.
The lie always has truth by the scruff of the neck.
Cool.
So in lies, there is some element of truth, and no one can ever speak the whole truth. That's why the sciences, if you think, oh, the sciences get us to reality itself, is no. The deepest insights are in the appearance.
Oh my God, dude, there's nothing more boring than, like, is that like naturalism or something like that, where you're like, there is no, it's only about science. It's only about science. Science and logic, and praise logic and all that stuff. I'm like, nah, man.
Yeah. We're obviously fans of science, but it's not the thing that reveals everything over and above.
Yeah, of course. Good disclaimer.
I mean, like, truth in a sense, you can, Heidegger defines it as that which reveals something. It unconceals the world in some way. So the university is just full of different disciplines that unconceal the world in different ways. Literature unconceals the world. Physics unconceals the world. But they unconceal the world in different ways.
Yeah, which is beautiful.
Yeah.
I was with someone. I was in a meeting. And this is a while back. But the person next to me who was in a higher bracket than I was in the meeting, was mirroring everything I did, like physically mirroring.
Oh yeah.
I'd never seen that. Like, I was testing it and I wasn't making eye contact, but I saw, I would change my body position. I'd like cross my legs, or like, I would literally, I took my hands that were like clasped and I laced that. I intertwined my fingers, and the person did that too. I've never seen anything like it.
And weirdly, they were able to do it before you.
Yeah, that's the craziest part. Yes. And it's like they knew, I was going to do that as well. That's really good. I was like, this is fun. And I felt like a weird, like, it felt kind of it just felt good. It felt like, I was like, this guy's like copying me. Yeah. And I was like, I didn't know what it was. And I don't know if it's like me coming off a certain way or them coming off a certain way, but it was like, I saw it. Like,
yeah.
I saw it happening.
Well, there you go. That's telling you something of their truth that is in the appearance.
And then, know, in therapy, I absolutely find myself mirroring my therapist.
Oh yeah.
And I think he does it to me on purpose.
Yeah.
As a way of establishing comfort or something like that.
I know. Oh yeah. I mean, people also do it on purpose. I mean, yeah, in some business meetings where people will like, but there it's usually very, very obvious then. It's like, it's a bit silly, but yeah, people mirror to try and get you to like them, you know?
Yep. Yep.
but then again, that tells you something.
I did that at coffee the other night. I was mirroring the person.
Is that right? Yeah. Oh yeah. Very good.
Let's see if this works.
Yeah.
The personality isn't going to do it. So maybe.
Yes, that's right. You got to use everything you can.
anyway. So yeah. So so that's sex, I guess. There
well,
you go.
Yeah. And that's, yeah. And it's, of course, it's a very
tangential.
I can't say that word.
Tangential. Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Way of looking at sex, but it's more like sexuality as in feminine and masculine, in a sense of to be human, we relate in different ways to appearance. And the masculine traditionally was the, as I say, you believe that you are what you are, and the feminine is you pretend. And, then the interesting thing is in psychoanalysis and in contemporary philosophy is that actually the appearance tells you something of the truth, that we're always in the way we present ourselves. It tells us something very deep about who we are. And if we're sensitive to that, we can learn a lot about ourselves.
That's interesting. I feel like the way that, because I love clothes very much, and I like deciding like what my style is and interior design and all that stuff, and I enjoy it, and it's all very tied. It's all very like, I feel like it's a part of growth to be like, discover your preferences and what you like wearing and all that.
Yeah.
And it can become a little, I can get my head in about it if I start thinking that it's all fake. It can stop getting as fun if all of a sudden I'm like dressing up and I'm like, well, this is just me trying to look this way. And I'm like, well, of course it is.
Yeah.
That's exactly what I'm trying to do. But
I guess something like Halloween allows people the freedom to do it. Whereas on Halloween, people dress up and they have the freedom to perform their identity. You know, they can appear in a very, very different way. So like
you're talking about how I was a sexy nurse.
Yeah. I like your sexy nurse outfit.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I mean, it doesn't have to be Halloween. So, you know. I haven't dressed up for Halloween in like years.
Yeah.
I haven't. For some reason, I'm just like, it's not my, it just seems like way too much work to like get a costume and be like, this is what I look like. Yeah.
Yeah. It doesn't fit me. I haven't done it since I was a kid.
I would love to see you wear any costume, but I want to see you wear a very basic costume.
Yes, but of course,
like
this is a costume. This is the costume that I believe is not. There was a theologian, this might collect or not, but it's a theologian who I like, who supposedly once went to this masked orgy, and when he went in,
best kind.
So everyone was in masks but naked,
mm-hmm.
And he came to the door and he wasn't wearing a mask. And he walked in, and one of the hosts of the orgy said, you know, you're supposed to wear a mask. And the theologian said, you know, this is my mask. Which is
a nerd. So, way to ruin a party.
Yeah, I know.
Way to make it about him.
Yeah, yeah. And so then they ended up just talking philosophy all night.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah.
but it was in, you know,
which is to say, sex. Having sex is a form of talking philosophy.
Yes,
just like start means. Saying words. That's like one of those things that sounds deep that has absolutely
that makes,
no meaning.
I mean, makes no sense whatsoever.
Here's what I think, Pete. I think having sex itself is actually like. It is a discussion about philosophy if you think about it, because it's two people giving this.
Yeah,
bullshit.
No, that's the worst kind of bullshit. That's like critical theory for me. But this is the story by Tillich, but I don't know if it's true or not. But he was saying basically that his symbolic significance as a philosopher and theologian is, of course, performative. It's a mask,
mm-hmm.
and that the difference is it's a mask that we imagine is real. But and then the next step, of course, is to say that the reality is in the mask. So this is a costume I'm wearing, but the costume tells the truth of something of my desires.
I was thinking about this with stand-up. I've been like, we were talking about this a little bit, but like I did a show. And I've found that in the recent weeks, I'm like, there's something happening on stage with my performance that's way more just like there's like whatever the like I'm the next step is finally happening, and I think it took me getting that other the other stuff out of my system, but now it's like there's an integration on stage that's happening where it's like way more less like witty and less like snarky and dry and far more like energized and loud and weird. And I was like, I was thinking, and I was like, I want the performance style that I have on stage to mirror my internal world on a actual performance level, not just on a joke level. Like I want me on stage to be just as I am inside, which is essentially this like thought out sort of like very analytical brain punctuated with absolute chaos and self-doubt and weirdness and like weakness and all these things and ego and all that stuff with insecurity. And I'm trying to figure out a way to integrate that on a actual like artistic performance level, and it has absolutely like reinvigorated me into stand up because I was out. Like like in the past couple months I've just been like totally focused on doing this hour and wanting it to be done, and then when it's done now it's like, oh my god, I feel a sense of like I can't
freedom to do something
wait.
Else.
Yeah. Yeah, and I love it, and I'm so excited to like to explore that. And I feel like it's a result of trying to care less and less about the audience, which is also a like total thing of my life. Like it's absolute, like, cause I've spent my life being very like, you know, what does everybody think? What's their opinion? And I'm very affected by people's opinions of me. And so now I'm like trying to let go of that. And it's really fun. It's also terrifying. It's like totally scary.
Yeah.
It's terrifying. Cause now I'm like, oh, and it also feels like it took me this long to stop giving a shit so much about what everybody thinks. It's a very I was thinking about this with fundamentalism too, and just sort of like getting out of that world and that mindset. And I always thought that like, and I think a lot of people think this, where when you leave when we watched the Rob Bell documentary, Pete Holmes talked about this a little bit, but he's like, you exit this world and then you think that's it, and then you think like whatever, and then Pete Holmes is like, no, talk to me in 5 years or something like that. And I'm like, holy crap, that's what it is. That's the fun part.
Yeah.
Like the easy part is going like, this world doesn't work for me anymore, but then there's so many other things. And then what happens, at least in my experience, is I've just been like, why, how did I wait so long? And that applies to everything from like relationships to performance to spirituality to all this stuff. It's really cool and fun, but it's a matter, it all relates to the audience and to the appearance and to making sure that I'm like succumbing to what their preconceived notions are.
I think that, you know, this could be a subject for a subjectivity. What is the subject? Because I think in one sense, who we are is appears in the repeated failure to express who we are. So in your comedy, you know, you're expressing something of who you are and what you are. And there'll be reinvigorations of that, but you'll always, of course, feel to present yourself. You'll always feel that, oh, I can do it better, I can do it differently. So you'll always feel to represent your inner world, but that failure is what kind of generates the desire to do it. But the trick is the idea that the difference between general and special relativity is, if I'm not very good at science, so I'm probably getting this a little bit wrong, but you know, there is this idea that mass curves space. So mass, like a planet, obviously has a curvature around it of space. But then, you know, the move went to the idea that no, mass doesn't curve space. The curvature of space is mass. So the very curvature of space is what is basically generates or creates mass. And in subjectivity, I think it's the same, as we are constantly trying to express ourselves in our clothes, in our comedy, in our music, in the table we buy, in the coffee we drink, in the establishments we go to. And it never quite works. And we're always feeling that, oh, who I am, you know, I'm trying to express that in all of the things that are part of my life. But, you know, I never quite get the chair that really says this is me. but actually, maybe the truth is the subject is what's formed in the repeated failure to express what the subject is. So in our repeated failures to express who we are, that is who we are.
Yeah.
That is our subjectivity. And so you can never express the true essence of yourself. All you can do is continually to feel to present the truth of who you are, and in the constant failure, that is who you are.
Yeah, that's like
that's a Lacanian notion of subjectivity.
And it also just sounds like something you should learn in like art class. Like it sounds like, because the moment I'm done with anything, I'm like, well, that's old. That's not me. I was doing something. I mean, the thing that I just did, it's like, great. Like that's done. And it was a moment in time. But really what it is this new thing that did it. And it's like completely that. It's just like it's a failure. And that failure generates the next failure, which will lead me to the next failure, even though I hope at some point there's commercial success among these failures. But anyway.
But the problem within consumerism is, of course, is some people get so caught up in wanting the thing that articulates who they are. And because they can never do it, they will move constantly from one thing to another. So there's people who will constantly buy clothes, constantly buy stuff for the house, or constantly move house, because in one sense they're unconsciously attempting to kind of express their subjectivity in their exterior world, but because it will always constitutively fail, they end up breaking their bank by just buying all the stuff they don't need. And actually, if you come to feel more comfortable with the idea that actually my subjectivity is created through the constant failure to express it, you then are freed from this compulsive buying. You don't need the table that perfectly expresses who you are. You still want to get stuff that expresses something of who you feel you are, but you're free from the idea that there's something that will actually work. You go like, I am, in a sense, the empty space around which I fill my world with things.
I was thinking about that and like all of these ideas, these very kind of like, I mean, it sounds like what you're talking about is like against capital, like freeing yourself from capitalism kind of thing. But, I was thinking about that in relation to romantic things and partners and like finding a partner and all that. And I think about it a lot. And, part of that is going like, how do I find someone who is not consumed by the like lie of like the next thing will solve it. And then I'm like, do I need that? Do I even want that? And then, because what am I really saying? Like, all I'm saying is I want somebody who's this mirror of me or who believes all these things. Cause I was having coffee with this person and she was lovely. And it was very like, we were discussing kind of political, differences and ideologies. And she was in like Atlas Shrugged and all that stuff, and she just read that, and so we were talking about that whole thing, and she was incredibly intelligent, and she was making a case for, you know, libertarian stuff, and I can completely understand that political ideology, because I was that for a long time. But we kept going back and forth, and I was like enjoying the discussion, and then in my mind I was like, well, this person doesn't believe what you believe, and therefore this couldn't work. And I think about that sometimes with like spouses or husbands and wives who have differing political stances, and how that works and if it can work, because in my mind I'm like, I want somebody who just is exactly what I think they should be, but that's not going to be what I get ever, because that doesn't exist. Because, and even if it did exist, like we've talked about before, I wouldn't want it after 10 minutes because it's too much like me. So it's like all of a sudden I'm having this really good, interesting conversation that's like immediate and very like in depth, but also holding myself back because I'm sitting there going like, you know, and it's, and I didn't even have a problem with what she was saying. The principles that she was talking about, I agreed with, but it was an interesting like divergence. Like on one hand, I'm sitting here enjoying the company and having a great time, but then there's this whole hang up happening in my mind that I'm making up because she's not fitting into my paradigm of like what I think.
And a lot of what we want, I mean, this is very natural. It's just not good to base a relationship on it, but we want someone who solidifies our sense of self. So it's not even that necessarily they believe the same things as us, but that they look at us the way we want to be looked at. So they might think something very, very differently, but if they think of us as intelligent, or they think of us as attractive, or whatever it is, if our sense of self is fragile, so the other solidifies that by making us feel masculine or feminine or whatever it is, then
feminine. It's when they like make them. Me feel feminine.
That yeah,
I feel best.
That's why you'll really like them.
Yeah.
So that's called the imaginary levels. We look for someone who helps to solidify our sense of self, And they look at us the way we want to be looked at. But as soon as they kind of puncture that, mm-hmm. then we start to freak out. But actually, that's where relationships can become really healthy.
Yeah.
They can also disintegrate. But if someone punctures
also
your sense of self,
yeah.
what's that?
Also healthy.
Also healthy.
So it disintegrates after that. It's a yeah. healthy thing.
Yeah, that's what it probably is. Yeah. But as in, it's over.
Yep.
You get rid of it. Yeah. Yeah. Because a lot of like honeymoon relationships where you always are. Feel like you're one with the person is often because they look at you the way you want to be looked at and you look at them the way they want to be looked at. So you support their femininity, say they support your masculinity.
That's
but
interesting.
As soon as that starts to rupture, the people start to freak out. But that's because, you know, we're not comfortable with that kind of challenge.
It's an interesting like the whole the litmus test thing, or like the check boxes, you know, it's like I want somebody who's, you need somebody who checks off all your boxes, and that's a very systematized
yeah.
Way of like approaching a relationship, where you're like, I want somebody who's tall and they're you know, handsome and they have a little bit of stubble, and this is just my checklist.
Yeah.
And you know, all these things. And I was talking to a friend of mine who was like, yeah, you know, she checks off all my boxes. And I'm like, but how do you like feel? Like, how do you yeah. actually feel? And I'm asking this question as though I'm doing it from some sort of superior, like, but how does she mean? And, but then in my mind, I'm like, then I'm going out and I'm having coffee people and I'm being like, I'm doing the exact same thing. I'm sitting yeah. there like systematizing it and making, you know, do you do this? Do you do that? Do you do this? Do that? But really what we're all searching for, like you're saying, is this feeling of like, okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
But that, like you're saying, that can't last because eventually isn't a sustainable feeling. That's fun.
Yeah. Yeah. There you go.
How long have we been going? We did it.
We did it. We did it. We got to the end.
I mean, I feel like we did.
I feel like we did. I'm happy.
Do you feel like it's been 55 minutes?
No, I feel, which is great. Yeah, that's always nice. That's always a sign of a good one, is not when we're going, oh, right, we're only 5 minutes in and we're
yeah,
done.
Yeah.
It's more like, oh,
Plato,
right.
Lacan.
great. Cool. Well, no, that's, I think that's a good way to wrap up the three-part on sex.
Great, love it. My takeaway is relax your... don't enjoy. I'm going to continue enjoying my appearance, and I'm going to continue to.
You're probably the only one who can. So.
Be vain, yeah. me and my mirror, yeah.
You and your mom.
Yep. Yes, yeah. Yep. Yeah. So I'm gonna continue to do it with the. I'm gonna try to step away from the, thing of this isn't really who you are.
Yeah.
I don't like that. It's not fun anymore. Like, no, this is who you are. Who you are is fake.
Yes. Who you are is fake. That's good. Yeah. I mean, my takeaway is, I guess, just the idea that, I had a few thoughts. Oh, yeah. Well, there's no way to express the kind of truth, the essence of who you are, that's kind of like a lure. That's a trap that you'll end up always buying stuff to try to express it, finding people who you know solidify that view of yourself. It's a trap that will destroy you, but that you are created through the very failure to do that. That in a sense, the appearances, the play of appearances, is a more accurate representation of who you are. And so another, it's kind of, I suppose, is don't feel that you're trying to express the essence of who you are in your clothes, in your house, in what you drive. You can't, and that's a good thing. Enjoy the play of appearances, and there's something of the truth that is glimpsed in that constant failure.
Thank you, everybody, for listening. And please, if you enjoyed this episode or any of the other ones, please leave us a nice review on the iTunes. And I think that's all for today.
Wonderful. Thanks, people. Bye.